Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on wisdom when we come back. You know, Charles Lyell is one of the pillars of modern geology, and he published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted today that most people who believe in these principles don't know who it was that originated them. But it's from Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins has been devised by simply projecting all of the natural processes and forces that we observe today back through time indefinitely. And in that way, catastrophes, like Noah's flood, are strictly ruled out. And this process is called science. Well, listen to this. Niagara Falls. This famous waterfall is a magnificent example of a geologic clock. That geologic clock reveals a very young Earth, because the rim of the falls is wearing back at a known rate every year. And geologists recognize that it has only taken 5,000 years or less for Niagara Falls to erode to where it is today from its original precipice. Now, what have our teachers been telling us about the extinction of the dinosaurs? Do you remember they told us that was 65 million years ago? But when we look at the physical evidence, like Niagara Falls, it tells us 5,000 years, which is precisely what the Bible tells us. Now, you know, boys and girls, we don't have to be rocket scientists to do the math on these kinds of pseudo-scientific lies. And that's just one more of the many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades under the title science. And it's one more of the many lessons in our Mosaic Law School that we conduct twice a year here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. Doesn't cost you anything. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. And best of all, it's free. It doesn't cost you anything to find out. So why don't you call right now and ask for one. The number is 417-273-4967. And once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about wisdom. What is it? Where do you get it? Well, the Bible tells you where to get it. And if any lack wisdom, let him ask of God, and he will give it to him liberally. Now, for an evolutionist or a scientist, he may look at that and say, well, that's that religious crap again, and you can't test that. Well, sure you can. Even the God of the Bible, the Creator himself, says you can prove revelation. I don't know where the scientists got off on this kick of you can't prove revelation. You can't prove religion, but then I'm not here defending religion. I don't think that's defensible. There's a lot of fairy tales that go on, and Christmas is a fairy tale. That's a religious fairy tale. And Easter, that's another religious fairy tale. So when we look at Christmas and Easter, and we see that they're fairy tales, we say, well, that came from the religious guys. The religious guys get this out of the Bible, so therefore the Bible must be a fairy tale. Oh, no, that's what we call assuming facts, not an evidence. That's called guilt by association. It is true that religious people believe in a lot of fairy tales. And then they point their fingers over here at the science community, the evolution guys, you know, the scientific people. And they say, well, you people believe in evolution. That's a fairy tale. And that's true. Evolution is a fairy tale. It's a fairy tale for adults. But then Christmas and Easter is a fairy tale for adults also. Because the children don't think up these fairy tales. It's the adults that foist these fairy tales off on their children. So you send your kid to public school and he learns the fairy tale of evolution. You send your kid to Sunday school and church and he learns the fairy tale of Christmas and Easter. And so my point is, I don't think these fairy tales have much to do with wisdom, knowledge, understanding, reason, logic, or as my old granddad used to say, just plain common sense. Oh, they may be fun. I'm not suggesting, you know, that drugs aren't fun and that whiskey isn't fun and that smoking cigarettes isn't fun and going to the whorehouse isn't fun. There's all kinds of things out there that are real fun things to do. But that doesn't mean that they make any sense. Getting walleye drunk, you know, doesn't make a lot of sense. Going to the whorehouse and getting a dose of clap doesn't make a lot of sense. And becoming a drug addict doesn't make a lot of sense, and getting AIDS, herpes, and VD doesn't make a lot of sense, but, you know, those are fun things to do. People do it every day. Christmas is probably a lot of fun. That doesn't mean that it makes a lot of sense. So, I've pointed that out, and we've been looking at this, and I said, look, communism and Christmas don't make any sense. Experience in place of revelation doesn't make a lot of sense. Evolution doesn't make a lot of sense. Cancer, Christmas, education, insurance. These are not sensible enterprises. They just plain don't make sense. Insurance does not make sense. We all do it, but that isn't because it's logical or it's reasonable or rational. It's something that we buy because we have to. Guy says, well, I have to have auto insurance. Does that make it sensible? I pointed that out to you last time. I said, you know, you're going to have an $1,835 wreck once every 32 years, and you're going to pay $25,000 for the protection. Does that make a lot of sense? Some people probably say, well, yeah, it makes all the sense in the world to me. And that's why Americans are flat-ass broke and poor as church mice, and then they run around saying, America is the richest nation in the world. Well, I guess you could run around saying that. Doesn't make it true just because you say it, but I hear that all the time. I watch television and say, America is the richest nation in the world. Surely we can afford thus and such and so and, you know, the reason that you're flat ass broke and that you're as poor as church mice is because you've been doing that for the last 70 years. You've been outspending yourselves into prosperity, and you've spent yourself into poverty. The average American family of four has a $70,000 consumer debt on an income, on average, of $48,000 a year. Now, maybe that makes good economic sense to you if you've been to college and you got a degree, but it doesn't make any economic sense to us plumbers, carpenters, and electricians out here that have to pay the bills. Doesn't make any sense to me. Now, when we take a look at our debt structure in this country, when we take a look at our economic process, our economy, our banking system, our social security system, our income tax system, our paper money system, have you ever thought about it? Does it make a lot of sense to you? Let's take up the subject of social security just for kicks. It's called the third rail of politics. And if a politician comes out and says, we need to tinker with Social Security, we need to change it, we need to do this or that, he risks being voted out of office. So Americans are very, very sensitive to Social Security. Now, I wanted to tell you, from my perspective, it's just me now, I don't have Social Security. I opted out of the program back in 1970. Well, I stopped paying into it in 1978, and then I rescinded my Social Security account in 1984. And I haven't had Social Security from 1984, this is 94 to 104 and 07, 23 years. Meanwhile, I turned 65. And normal people, you know, when I go to my class reunion, you know, when you go to your class reunion, you talk to all the people there. Well, when we were turning 62, the subject that everybody talked about was retirement and Social Security. And then when you get down past 65, it's, well, how's your retirement and Social Security working out for you? Now, I'm still working. And here I am, 70, and I'm working yet. And all of my friends, all of my schoolmates, you know, that I went to school with, they're all retired, I think, without exception. Like, there might be some guys that are still working, but they're few and far between. Some of them have some pretty neat retirement programs. You know, they'll tell me about the one guy I was really impressed with. He has six houses that he rents. Plus, he's retired from the electricians union, so he's got a pension from the electrical union, and then he's got Social Security and six houses now. And his guy's name was Henry, and he wasn't exactly, you know, the class valedictorian. You know, he wasn't exactly the smartest or the sharpest marble in the drawer back in the ninth grade, you know, in Mrs. Denbo's English class. I could tell you that, old Henry. But boy, did he surprise everybody. I think he probably fared out better than anybody else I know of. And here I am. Look at me. I'm still working. And that's because I took a look at Social Security and I did the numbers on it and I said, oh my God, I can't believe it. It's this bad. So let me share some of these Social Security numbers with you. Not that I want you to drop out of Social Security. It's a choice that you have to make. But Social Security takes 16.1% of everything you create and produce. I don't know if you knew that or not, but if you were to take 100, you know, and just divide that by 16.1, that's 6.2, so it takes about 1/6 of everything you create and produce. Now, Social Security, coupled with the income tax, the minimum income tax payment, now 17%. Add 17 and 16, and those two taxes, which are two taxes out of 14 taxes that we're all subject to, those two taxes take 1/3 of everything you create and produce. 1/3. So I looked at that one day and I said, oh my God, I go out and make $100 and the government takes 33 of it and leaves me with 67. And I said to myself, well, what if I had the whole $100? Would I live better? Could I pay my bills easier? And I came to the conclusion that, yeah, I think if I had that extra $33, I'd probably have a few more bucks to buy some Burgermeister or something, you know, on Friday night and eat some pretzels and beer while I'm watching TV. You know, like Joe Sixpack does. And so right away I said, well, that Social Security. Well, now somebody said to me, well, you need Social Security for your retirement. You know, you're going to get to be an old man one of these days. And he was right. I got to be an old man, all right. And so here I am, and I'm still working. You know, when I'm 85 years old, I hope I'm still here working. I hope to live to be 110, and the day I die, I want to die on my way to work. I don't want to retire. And I took a look in the Bible, and I couldn't find any retirement program in there at all. Moses lived to be 120 years old. He died on the job. Did you know that? God took him up on top of a mountain over there and killed him up on top of the mountain and buried him live and direct himself. That's so that you couldn't get his ankle bone and make a religious relic out of it. So Moses was working the day he died. He was up there communing with God and doing his thing. And I took a look at Joseph and David. And, you know, David was the king of Israel. He died king. He died in office. He didn't retire. Queen Elizabeth is going to die in office. She's not going to retire. So I took a look at quite a few people in the world and how many of these people retired. You know, Thomas Edison, he didn't retire. Now, I took a look at the people who were the most successful in the world, and I couldn't find any retirement programs with the most successful people in the world. So why did we buy into this retirement idea? Where did this retirement thing come from? It came from Social Security. Up until 1933 with Franklin Roosevelt, people didn't retire. I guess rich people retired, but normal Joe Sixpacks didn't. They worked until they died. They just worked until they couldn't work anymore. My old great-granddaddy, Abe Snyder, he was a pretty wealthy guy, and he died at age 92. He never did retire. He was still at the head of his business enterprises and operations the day he died. And so I took a look at that and I thought, maybe there's something to this. So I thought, if I were to drop out of Social Security, I mean, if I'm not going to retire, what the hell do I need it for? You know, if you think about it rationally, if I'm never going to retire, then why do I need a retirement fund? What I need is an investment fund. I need to take the money that I'm going to pay in income tax and Social Security and put that into an investment fund. I looked at income, and I decided that income wasn't good for me either. Now, people that have income, I don't want you to think I'm a tax protester or that I'm trying to get you, you know, out of the income tax system. I don't care whether you pay income tax or not, or whether you're in income. I just looked at it and said, I don't think this income is all it's cracked up to be. And when did we get off onto this income thing anyway? Well, we back around the turn of the century. I mean, there's income and there's property. People like my granddad used to deal in property. Property's never been assessed or taxed. So I looked at that and I said, well, would I like to get into something like income, which is a franchise, which is taxable, or would I like to get into something like property, which is a right and isn't taxable? And then I looked at the history of it and I said, gee, the wealthy people, you know, guys like Henry Ford and Thomas Edison, and so, those people dealt in property. They didn't deal in income. And then somebody came along about income tax time, you know, about Federal Reserve time, about Federal Reserve paper money time. Now, let me give you a little background here. Did you know that in the Bible, there is a statute that says you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag? It ain't exactly worded that way in Leviticus 19:35, but I'm going to read it to you anyway. Leviticus 19:35 and 36. Here's what it says. It says, you shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, in meat yard, in weight, or in measures. Just balances, just weights, a just ephah, and a just hin shall you have. I am the Eternal your God, which brought you up out of the land of Egypt. He repeats that. There's a second statute here. It's in Deuteronomy 25, I believe it is. Let's see if I'm right. Deuteronomy 25. Sometimes I get these numbers rattling around in my head over here, and having never been to seminary, you know, not being a trained, real trained professional here in the Bible. Here it is. And I'm right. It's Deuteronomy 25, verse 13. Listen to this. As it relates to unjust weights and balances, it says, Then you shall say before the Eternal your God, I have brought you away the hallowed things. No. Wrong. Oh, for crying out loud. That's 26. 25. Yeah, here it is, 25:13. I was on the wrong page here. You shall not have in your bag diverse weights of great and of small, and you shall not have in your house diverse measures of great and of small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have. Now, what do you think these Federal Reserve notes are compared to gold and silver coin? No, our founding fathers, they followed these biblical injunctions. So in 1792, they created what was called the Coinage Act of 1792. And they gave us just weights and balances. They gave us gold and silver coin. You know, guys like George Washington and Benjamin Franklin and, you know, the guys that signed the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. They gave us just weights and balances. They followed the biblical laws that deal with honest money. There's a guy running for president right now. His name is Ron Paul. Ron Paul is the only non-communist running for president in 2008. All the rest of them are communists. Hillary Clinton is a communist. Mike Huckabee is a communist. And Mitt Romney is a communist. I mean, you know, it's nothing personal. I'm not criticizing these people, you know, and I'm not criticizing you. Don't get me wrong. America is a communist nation. We practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And the second plank calls for a heavy progressive income tax. All of the presidential candidates support the heavy progressive income tax, the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, except Ron Paul. He wants to abolish the income tax, which is I think, a pretty wise choice. I'm opposed to the income tax. I think it's bad public policy. But, you know, I'm not sitting here telling you that you should abolish the income tax. I mean, if that's what you want, you know, freedom of choice is what life is all about. And I'm all in favor of you having freedom of choice. I just don't like me having my freedom of choice taken away from me. So Ron Paul is opposed to the Federal Reserve System. He's opposed to unjust weights and balances. He wants to abolish the Federal Reserve and replace our monetary system with gold and silver coin. He wants to repeal the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto and reestablish this biblical principle from Deuteronomy 25:13. Now, you talk about a weirdo now. This guy Ron Paul is about as weird as they come. But I could support a guy like Ron Paul being an anti-communist more than I could Hillary Clinton, you know, or Barack Obama and Bill Richardson. You know, Bill's a nice guy. I mean, I'm not opposed to Bill per se, but he's a communist. And Bill Clinton, you know, that's Hillary's husband. He was a communist. And Hillary's a communist. They all practice these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And Social Security is the eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto. And Americans have adopted the Social Security program like they thunk it up themselves. It wasn't. It really goes back, you know, to 1848 with a guy named Karl Marx. But now the return that you get off of Social Security, you know, is about, you know, I checked mine here, it was a few years ago, I was going to get $805 a month here if I would have retired at age 62, you know, which was, I don't know, 7, 8, 10 years ago now. But moral to the story is I would have got $800 a month. And then every year they would give me a cost of living raise, you know, in my Social Security pay. And inflation in the year 2007 is running at about 11%, and this year you Social Security recipients got a 3.4% raise in your Social Security payments. And I looked at that and I said, now that doesn't make any sense to me. Americans, they love Social Security, and when the cost of living goes up by, oh, say, 10%, and the government comes in and gives them lying statistics and tells them that the real inflation rate is really only 4% or less, you lose 6% of your purchasing power. You lose 6% and you love it. I don't think that's very wise. Now, I don't know. You know, some people's determination as to what is wise and what isn't, you know, maybe a little different than mine, and, you know, you're entitled to your opinion. In the Bible, God said in a book called Hosea, he says, you know, you people have a bag full of holes. Your bag. A bag is what you carry your money in, a money bag, and it's full of holes, and the money's leaking out of the holes, and Social Security has got a bunch of holes in it, and it's leaking money. Now, here's another number maybe you hadn't thought of. You know, if you're a top-of-the-line income earner, let's suppose you're a doctor, a dentist, or a lawyer, and you're making $100,000 a year. Well, just take your 16.1%. You're probably self-employed, so you're probably paying 15.3%. So just take your $100,000. Now, you don't pay the 15.3% on the whole $100,000. I think the limit is up around $80,000 right now, but it's pushing $100,000. So just for the purposes of figuring this out, you're going to pay about $12,000 a year. And I see you're going to get out of college when you're 22 and you're going to work till you're 62, so you're going to work for 40 years. So let's take 12,000 times 40 years. and you're going to pay in about $480,000. Let's round it off to a half a million, shall we? So you're going to pay in $500,000. Okay. How much money are you going to get back from Social Security, and for how long? Well, you retire at age 62, and you're going to die at age 75. So that's 13 years. But if you retire at age 62, you can only get 80%. So you got to wait until you're 65 to get 100%. So if you're going to get 100%, you're only going to get it for 10 years. So you can get 80% for 13 years, or you can get 100% for 10 years. Well, you know, most people, they want to get after it right away, so they want to take 80% for 13 years. And so I figured that you'd be money ahead if you took 100% for 10. I mean, you're getting 20% more for 10 years rather than 20% less for 13 years. So my calculations tell me that you make more by waiting 3 more years, 36 months, and getting 100%. And so here's what you're going to get back. You're going to get back about $1,000 a month, $12,000 a year for 10 years, $120,000. Let's add this up, do the arithmetic. You're going to pay in $500,000. Okay. And you're going to get $120,000 of it back. And so let's take $120,000. That means you're going to pay $380,000 to have somebody in Bethesda, Maryland, write you 120 checks. Let's see. $380,000 divided by 120 is $3,116 per check. Honest to God, you lawyers, you doctors, you professional people out there with college degrees, are you so incompetent that you can't manage your own $500,000? I mean, you're able to make, think about this for a minute, you're able to make $100,000 a year times 40 years. That's $4 million. But you're unable to manage $500,000 of it in your old age. Is that what your government is telling you? Now, does that make a lot of sense? I mean, especially if you're a professional, especially if you've got a degree from college and you're making $4 million in your lifetime. You can't handle a half a million all by yourself. You got to hire some nameless, faceless bureaucrat in the Social Security Administration who for the last 10 years of your life is going to write you a check every month. They're going to write you 120 checks. Hell, they're not even going to be written. They come out of a printing press, for crying out loud. And you need that administered to you because you can't manage it yourself? Now, I'm not here to tell you that you people are incompetent. I'm just here to ask you, you know, honest to God, do you really think you need that? Now, that's if you're a real smart guy. Now, if you're not so smart and you're just a blue-collar worker, you're going to pay in about $7,000 a year for the same 40 years, about $280,000, a quarter of $1 million, and you're going to get paid back $90,000. Honest to God, are you people, you know, you're a plumber, you're a carpenter, you're an electrician, you're a small businessman, you're a tradesman, are you so incompetent that you can't manage your own $90,000? You know, on average, you're going to make $48,000 a year for 40 years. $48,000 times 40. It's $1,920,000 in your lifetime, and you can't manage? Can't manage a quarter of a million of it? All by yourself? You know, no help? And, of course, if you're just a burger flipper, now that's understandable. You're really dumb. You're a high school dropout. You never went anywhere in life. And so you're going to be paying in round numbers, about $70,000 at minimum wage. It's about $70,000 into Social Security. And they're going to charge you about a third of that to administer it for you. You probably need Social Security at minimum wage. I would go so far as to say Social Security might make sense for people down at minimum wage. But for anybody that can walk, talk, think, chew gum, and has a degree after their name, I am amazed that Americans honest to God, believe in Social Security and believe it's a good program. That doesn't sound very wise to me. In fact, it sounds kind of dumb. Hey, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you don't want to come to school, you can do it at home. For more information, you can go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed to the webpage. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. The number to call, 417-273-4967. I'm always amazed. People call here and say, is that really free? You people must have been lied to for so long and so often. You know, they call. That's what I'm telling you. I send it out free. You know, it's 4 hours. I teach for hundreds of hours. I mean, my schools are about 30, 60, 70 hours. But the introductory CD sets for the purposes of telling you what I got to offer. Give you a few little pointers, you know, like we do here on the air every once in a while. And yeah, it's free, it didn't cost you anything, but call us and just ask for one. You know, I don't want to give you something you don't want to hear about. You know, if you want to hear about it, let me tell you. The number again, 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, the beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, they're mine and mine alone, so don't blame it on anybody but me. And they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Now, the people of America believe in the Federal Reserve and paper money. And I guess it's understandable. It's the only thing you know. And so, you know, if it's the way you're educated. I remember gold was taken out of circulation in this country in 1933. So by the time I came on the scene in 1939, we didn't have any gold coin. My granddad could remember gold coin. My Uncle Lyle could remember gold coin, but I couldn't because before my time. So I got introduced to gold coin about 1980. And once I got a gold coin in my hand, just test it. Just go down and buy yourself an ounce of gold, stick it in your hand, close your fist around it, and it's awfully hard to open your hand again. Now take $500 bills, wad them up, stick them in your hand, and open your hand. Your hand will open because the paper is not sticky like gold. Gold is awfully sticky. And you get gold in your hand, it's awfully hard to open your hand. You have to pry it open to let go of the gold. And so God, you know, the Creator, He said we ought to be using just weights and balances. We shouldn't be stealing from one another with paper money. And along comes the bankers, and they say, oh, no, that God, He's stupid. He's dumb. That's what Satan told Adam and Eve. Hey, that God guy, He's kind of stupid and dumb, telling you shouldn't eat off that tree over there. And so, experimentation. Remember, Adam and Eve, you know, were the first experimenters. They were the first scientists on planet Earth. They went out and experimented to find out whether or not what God was telling them was true or false. And they found out that it was true. Remember, God told him, He says, in the day that you eat off that tree, you will surely die. Satan came along and said, no, that's a lie. Don't you believe God for a minute. You will not die. Adam and Eve ate off the tree, and they did not die that day. June 10th, before B.C. They did not die that day. But they did die. And the statement that said, in the day that you eat off of that tree, comma, you will surely die. Adam lived to be 930 years old. I presume Eve was about the same age. I presume. Assuming facts, not in evidence again. Adam did die. He is not alive today. God told him the truth. But Adam didn't believe God, so he needed to experiment. Didn't find out. And he experimented. He made a decision. He made a choice. He had a choice to make, and he made it. And he found out. Now, I'm looking at Adam's mistake, Adam's scientific experience, and I say to myself, geez, do I need to do the same thing in order to learn the same lesson? That's why I'm a strong proponent of revelation, a very strong proponent of revelation. I like to watch other people. And then if they succeed at what they do, like here in America, for instance, we have been spending ourselves into wealth and riches. And I look at my friends and neighbors around me who practice the Federal Reserve Program. And they have credit cards, and I don't have any. And they have bank accounts, and I don't have one. And they have savings accounts in those banks, and I don't have any of that. And they use $100 bills and Federal Reserve notes, and I don't. And they're all driving new cars. And I'm not. And they all live in new houses, and mine isn't. And they've got mortgages to pay, and I don't. And they make car payments, and I don't. And so I'm watching these people, and I'm watching their lifestyle. These are the people that live in the wealthiest nation in the world. I live in the poorest nation in the world. I live in the United States of America. I live in a nation that has a $50 trillion debt. And that's just what's visible and we admit to. Then we're surety underwriters for trillions of dollars more. God only knows how much we're surety underwriters for. I haven't got a clue. But it's a bunch more. We can't pay the $50 trillion that we admit we owe. And then where I'm from, when people are in debt, they're not wealthy. We call those poor white trash. We got a bunch of them right over here on Poverty Ridge. And these people over here are just struggling from paycheck to paycheck. They live in the wealthiest nation in the world. I don't. I live in the poorest. There are some wealthy nations in the world that actually have money. Russia's one of them. And you know this guy Putin over here that the president makes fun of and one thing and another? Well, I don't know. Maybe he is a cheap, petty dictator. But looks like the people of Russia elected him. And that's kind of the drift that I got watching the 6 o'clock news with Katie Couric, that they elected that guy. Do you know that they got a foreign exchange surplus over there in Russia? I mean, they went bankrupt in 1989. And today, they've got the third largest reserves in the world, followed by China, Japan, and Russia's number three. It doesn't sound like them Ruskies over there are doing everything wrong. Did you know America used to be the wealthiest nation in the world? In 1950, the statement, we're the wealthiest nation in the world, was true. We Americans were number one in every one of the 15 leading economic indicators of industrial production. That is, we Americans produced more automobiles than anybody else in the world. In fact, we produced more automobiles than everybody else in the world. In 1950, we Americans produced 3.5 million cars. Everybody else in the world combined produced 750,000. In 1950, we Americans produced 100 million tons of steel. Everybody else in the world combined produced less than 100 million tons of steel. And it was the same in aircraft production and coal production and aluminum production and so on. Now, that's not true today. In the 15 of the 15 leading economic indicators of industrial production, America is not number one in any of the 15. Not a single one. And you call that the wealthiest nation in the world? You know, I just thought I'd throw that out there for your consideration. Now, when people are in debt, you know, I always looked at people, at wealthy people, as people that weren't in debt. Now, Frank Rocha was a pretty wealthy guy, at least in my estimation he was. He had a 1949 GMC pickup, and the fenders in the back were all rotted off. And old Frank, he wore bib overalls. That's what I wear. Right now, sitting at my desk, I'm wearing bib overalls. Cheap sack cloth, I guess they call that. And old Frank, he worked 7 days a week, and he never retired. Old Frank died on the job, you know. Now Frank Rocha in 1955 had $235,000 in the Bank of Lolita. 1955, $235,000 was a lot of money. The reason we know that is because Vivian up at the bank, she embezzled Frank's $235,000, invested it in 90-day government bonds, took the interest off of it, put the interest in her pocket, and put Frank's money back in. And she'd been doing that for 14 years. 14 years. Yeah, she would take, you know, Walter Bugnuda. He was a successful, wealthy dairyman. And she took Walter Bugnuda's $100,000 in the Bank of Lolita, and she took it out of the bank, and she invested it in 90-day government bonds at, I don't know, 5% or something like that. And then she took the interest money, put it in her pocket, put his money back in. When they audited it, his money was in the bank. Nobody ever missed it. Vivian never, never, ever was short a dime in anybody's account. But the people who had their money deposited in the bank didn't get paid their interest while their money wasn't in the bank. But Frank Rocha, who came from the Azores and couldn't read and write, he was totally illiterate, he missed his interest payment. So he went up to the bank and he said, "There's something wrong here. See, I have $235,000 in the bank." And $235,000 in the bank at 2% interest should pay me over the past 6 months this amount of money, and it isn't there. And so they audited his account and said, "Well, your money's in the bank, your money's here, but you didn't get paid that money during that period of time because your money wasn't in here." And he says, "Oh yeah, it was. I never took any money out." Which then caused an investigation, and Vivian got caught by an illiterate immigrant from Portugal. All the college graduates, all the Americans, all the people that could read and write, hell, they'd been ripped off for 14 years, and they never got, and she never got caught. She just did it to Frank once and got caught. You know, we call these immigrants, you know, kind of illiterate savages over here, and then we send our kids to public school. And they're learning at about the 50th percentile, you know. They're dumbed down. They can't read, can't write. You know, I have never met a Christian that could count. Man, I'm an old man pushing 70, and I haven't met a Christian yet that could count. And I haven't met a Jew yet that couldn't. But they really complain bitterly about the Jews and all their money driving around in Jew canoes. Because Jews can count and Christians can't, and they just get really uptight about that. And I sit here and I gotta ask, well, is that really very wise? I mean, can't Christians learn to count? Now when we take a look at the Federal Reserve and we look at the Bible tells us not to use unjust weights and balances, and we've been using unjust weights and balances, and we got inflation. And the average Joe Sixpack, he can't figure out what's wrong with inflation. Well, in 1930, if you'd have had a $20 gold piece, just one $20 gold piece, you could have gone out and bought a Hickey Freeman suit, wingtip shoes, a shirt, tie, suspenders, underwear. And do you know today, if you got a $20 double eagle, you can go cash that in, you get about $800, and you can go out and buy a Hickey Freeman suit, wingtip shoes, suspenders, shirt, underwear, the whole get up. Did you know that? All right. So gold then holds its value. it doesn't inflate. Now, if you had a $20 bill in 1930 and you stuck it under the mattress and you took that $20 bill out and you went down to John's suit shop, what do you think you're going to get for a $20 bill? I'm not sure you could buy a necktie for 20 bucks. Maybe. Now, the loss that you've suffered using paper money from 1930 to 2007 is 98%. In the time that we use paper money, from 1692 to 1792 in the colonies, in that 100-year period, the average loss actually wasn't 1792, it's 1783. From 1692 to 1783, the average loss was 90%. The experience that we have had is that when we deal in paper money, we lose. Everybody that deals in paper money loses. So in the scripture, God said, "You shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag." That's wise. I think that's very wise. Our founding fathers gave us gold and silver coin. And when we use gold and silver coin from 1792 to 1933, we never lost a dime in purchasing power. In fact, in 35 years, from 1865 to 1900, we gained 2% in purchasing power. If you put $20 in the bank in 1865, in 1900, it would buy $102 worth of goods. It gained 2%. That was sound money. I mean, when you worked and you retired or you got your Social Security check, it would buy the same amount of goods and services next year that it bought this year. In fact, you could use that same money to buy the same goods and services next year, 5 years, 10 years, 20, 30 years into the future. It would all buy the same amount or more. It never lost any value. There was no inflation. None. Zero. Zip. Zilch. Today, Americans think inflation is normal. It's cream on strawberries. Now, as a result of that, if you Americans today went into and took all of your dollars, you know, take all of your dollars in the bank, take all of your dollars that you've got in your Kroger account, all the dollars that you've got in your savings account that you've got stuck under the mattress, all the dollars that all Americans have, if we went out and we bought goods and services today, do you know how much we'd all get? 2 cents on the dollar. That's how much is out there. 2 cents on the dollar. 2%. And we, honest to God, believe that we're going to retire and collect 100 cents on the dollar in our retirement. We're unable to calculate inflation. And because of these Federal Reserve notes, because of our paper money and our credit cards and so on, it has warped our minds. It's warped our mental outlook. Let me give you an illustration. Let's suppose you took $10,000 in 1960 and you invested that in Dow Jones Industrial Blue Chip stocks. Well, that's a pretty good investment because you're going to get paid 5% per annum, 5% a year, on average, for the entire blue chips for 40 years until 2000. Well, if you take 5% compounded annually, boy, it really adds up. It's something to behold. It's called the magic of compounding. And you'd have $73,000. $10,000 in 1960 would increase at 5% a year compounded annually to $73,000 in the year 2000. That's wonderful. A lot of people have been told that story and they say, "Wow, I want to invest in some kind of a stock program." And so they do, and they have. Now, during the same period from 1960 to 2000, the average rate of inflation was 4.7%. So I got down here with my Sharp EL1197G, and I got to calculating, which means that your actual net profit was 0.3% per year compounded over that period of time, which at the same time, the capital gain tax was 28%. So if you take 28% off of the earnings that you make every year, which you have to pay capital gain tax, assuming, of course, that you're honest and you're not filching on your taxes over here, then if you took your $10,000 and then you took your $73,000 less the taxes, your actual purchasing power from the money that you have left is $6,200. You paid $3,800 in loss of purchasing power after taxes for the 40 years. So your $10,000 lost $3,800 in purchasing power. Is that wise investing? Now, that's the way Americans invest. That's the way Americans have invested. That's the way Americans are investing today. That's why I said, you know, most Americans are Christians. I never met a Christian that could count. I'm waiting. Now, the Jews don't seem to have that kind of a problem. I have some Jewish students every once in a while come through here. I got to ask them, you know, how do you do this? How do you do that? And what thing? My observation from watching the Jews over here is they don't do that. I have students that are stock brokers. I have Jewish students that are real estate brokers. But I don't see them investing that way. Now, just like Social Security, you know, Social Security does not give you a return. It is an expense. The 100-cent dollars that you paid into Social Security are paid out with 10, 15, 20-cent dollars when you retire. And then they give you a cost of living escalator of 3% a year when inflation is 10 to 15. Now, in the year 2008, it's projected inflation. If the amount of money that the Fed is turning out with Helicopter Ben is any indication, inflation is going to run 15% next year. It's 11% this year, 9% in 2006. So it went 9-11-15 is the inflation rate, and you Social Security recipients are getting 3-4% a year. And you call Social Security what? The third rail of politics? And you got all of these presidential candidates over here advocating Social Security. I don't know where Ron Paul sits on Social Security, but my guess would be that he probably would favor something on the order of voluntary or phase it out. And that's because Social Security is bankrupt. Did you know that? Yeah, I got to tell you this story. In 1940, Social Security was taken in at the rate of 80 to 1. That is, there were 80 people paying into Social Security for everybody drawn out. But by 1945, 5 years later, the ratio was 45 people paying in for everybody drawn out. By 1967, the ratio dropped again. For every 16 people paying in, there was one person drawing out. In 1996, for every 3.2 people paying in, there was one person drawing out. By the year 2020, there will be one person paying in and one person drawing out. Boys and girls, what does that tell you? It's bankrupt. Because at some indefinite time in the future, if you extrapolate this out, there will be one person paying in and two people drawing out, and one person paying in and four people drawing out, and one person paying in and eight people drawing out. Boys and girls, you know, you may believe in Social Security, but the bottom line to that is, at some point in time, you're not going to have enough energy to support 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128 other people. That's why when I looked at that some years ago, I said, oh my God, I need to get out of Social Security. That thing is bankrupt. And it's bankrupt in another way, too. It's bankrupt in dollars because today, while Social Security has continually raised the rates from, get this, 1940 you were paying in 1%. 1% of your gross income went to Social Security. Today it's 16%. So it's gone up 1,600%, hasn't it? 16 times. So while Social Security has gone up 16 times, the people paying into it has gone down from 80 to 1 to in about another 13 years, it'll be 1-to-1. Now, you know, even if you're a Christian and you can't count, you know, you ought to be able to figure out that, that doesn't sound right. Yeah, that's right. It doesn't sound right. And that's because it's upside down. That's the very term. That's the very definition of foolishness. You know, we ought to be able to learn from the experience of the past. We should be able to learn from the inflation of 1783. We should be able to learn from the depression of the 1930s. We should be able to learn from the experience that we now have had with the abandoning of gold in 1933 and the inflation that we have suffered from 1933 until today. Americans haven't learned anything. Now, a few, you know, there's a handful of people out here that can count. Ron Paul seems to be able to count all right, but the average guy can't. That's why I suggest that, well, maybe we ought to take a look at this and reevaluate it. You know, evolution's a fairy tale. Christmas is a fairy tale. Easter is a fairy tale. The Federal Reserve is a fairy tale. Social Security is a fairy tale. Insurance is a fairy tale. Communism is a fairy tale. Experience is a fairy tale. Cancer, education, public education, insurance, those are all fairy tales. We believe in them. We practice them. We spend money. We write checks every month to pay our insurance. But it doesn't profit us. Now, if we want to continue on with these fairy tales, you know, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. Get after it. Here at the law school, we have a different philosophy. We ought to look at life pragmatically. We ought to look at life wisely. We ought to learn from the mistakes of the past. We ought to look at the book of Proverbs and learn from Revelation. We ought to listen to the guy that's already done that and failed at it, and then learn from his mistake. I always tell my students, you know, what you want to do is you look at the losers in a legal sense. You look at the losers in the Supreme Court reports, and then you don't do that. You avoid it. And then you look at the winners. Those are the successes. You do what the winners did, and you'll probably be a winner. And you avoid what the losers did, and you probably will not be a loser. That's what we teach here at the law school. We think that that's wisdom as opposed to foolishness. You know, it's a choice that everybody has to make, and that's the choice that we make here. Hey, I'm about out of time again. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Remember, we offer a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one. They're free. Just call us at 417-273-4967 to order yours. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.